So today's class will be given by His Grace Bhaktivinod Prabhu, and today Bhaktivinod Prabhu will be talking about the essence of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Srila Rupa Goswami. In the future sessions, he will also be covering the essence of the teachings of teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Srila Sanatana Goswami also. So this will be in a seminar format. It will go on for a couple of sessions. As you all know that we have been doing the 19th chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Prabhu's class will be an encapsulation of what has been taught in this entire chapter. So I hand over the call to you, Prabhu. Bhaktivinod Prabhu, you can take over.
Okay. Very happy to join and think about the Lord Chaitanya and Rupa Goswami this time. Omagyana Timirandas Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarani Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So we'll be just going over a brief outline of just some various points that Srimad Mahaprabhu touches in his instructions to Srila Rupa Goswami. And I'm often reminded what Srila Prabhupada says about Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says that it's like PhD studies, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this chapter is, even though it looks brief in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami has elaborated it based on Mahaprabhu's instruction to Mahaprabhu has mentioned in one verse that I have given you a brief synopsis, but you please adjust it and elaborate it accordingly, because that's one of the services Srila Rupa Goswami was awarded, is to elaborate and write Bhakti Shastras. So already it's a PhD, and then there is more elaboration on some specific topics. So I kind of feel like Bhakti Sandarbha or Bhajiva Goswami or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or Srila Rupa Goswami, they're all like postdoctoral studies because you are still expanding something within a PhD topic and then going very deep into those tattvas. So from the perspective of understanding the Siddhanta, just like how studying Sri Bhashya is so important for Sri Vaishnavas to understand Siddhanta, studying the Sandarbhas is very important for very deep study of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So on that note, this is really not very difficult to summarize because it's very, very elaborate, and only recently I started paying some attention to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, though I was hearing a little bit here and there randomly, but systematic study I haven't really done, so kindly forgive me if I don't speak to your full satisfaction. So first Mahaprabhu, what he hints is, he says that to Rupa Goswami so many things, and he starts off by saying that there are so many species of life forms in this universe. It's like the verse, Jalajana Valakshani verse, you know, that 8,400,000 species of life forms. And then there are unlimited living entities who have, who are encased in these life forms, in the material realm. And all the living entities are spiritual, you know, atmas. And the size is 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair, as Mahaprabhu explains that to Rupa Goswami, that 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. So that's about the living entities. But there are two divisions of living entities, two divisions. And those that can move and those that cannot move. So among those that cannot move, you know, the immovable living entities, there are some plants, trees, like that. And then those that are moving, human beings are very small in quantity, actually. And then even among human beings, Mahaprabhu says, we can divide them into two broad categories. Those who are civilized or cultured, and those who are uncultured. So, of course, in the modern world, the amount of civilization of a country or progress of a country is measured by GDP. It's a very skewed view of understanding different civilizations or countries. But according to Mahaprabhu, those who are following the Vedas are considered cultured, and those who are not are uncultured. So that's the understanding in the, based on the Vedic literatures, that those who are followers of Vedas are considered cultured, and those who are not following are considered uncultured. And it's not about those who are Indians or not Indians. That is not the point here. Because even in India, there are philosophies like Charvak philosophy. It's also a traditional, very Vedic kind of old philosophy. So just because it's Vedic doesn't mean it's cultured. So Charvak philosophy doesn't reject the Vedas. So, but they don't have a philosophy. It's not about geographical region, but the followers of Vedas and those who are not followers. That is a broad classification Mahaprabhu gives. And even in Gita, we know how when Arjuna, he spoke something that didn't fully resonate with Vedic truths. Krishna said, Anarya, you speak like Anarya. So Anarya means those who are not Aryan, those who are not following the Varnashram Dharma. You speak like an uncultured person, but you pose like a learned man. You speak like a learned man, but your feelings are like uncultured. So that's what those who are following the Vedic path are Arya and then Anarya. So culture, uncultured, that's the division. And among followers of the Vedic knowledge, most of the people are following the Karmakanda part of the Vedas, the Sakama, in a Sakama mode, the Karmakanda part of raising oneself to get material acquisition. So in the, nowadays it's a desire for material things, but in those days it was material acquisition by following Karmakandas. Sakama mode. So they want the, they're attached to the material fruits. And then out of so many of such people who are following Vedic system, there may be some who are actually having a nishkama mood, which means they're detached from the material fruits. But even though they may be doing Vedic sacrifices, but they have some kind of a nishkama. They have some sense of a detachment, very duty-bound, and then they're detached from the fruits. And then among so many of them also, there may be some who have become very wise, and they aim for liberation. They aim for mukti. Not just detached from fruits, but there's a purpose for being detached from fruits, and that is to elevate oneself to the stage of liberation. Mukti. So that is there. But even among, not among, but the number I'm saying, the statistical figure, Among millions of such liberated persons, if you compare it from a statistical point of view, the pure devotee of Krishna is again even more difficult to find. So Mahaprabhu really nails down from 8,400,000 species, unlimited living entities, and then he comes to a devotee. So Mahaprabhu is not spending a lot of time on all these other paths, karma kanda, jnana, jnana mark, yoga mark, all these things. He's not spending time on these things. Because those time has already been spent for those things by other sages. So here Mahaprabhu came for a specific purpose, so he's really going down to the main thing. So why is a living entity called a devotee or Krishna's devotee is the best of all, these other people? Then he explains to Rupa Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami, that the fruit workers, they want the material enjoyment. You know, the karmakandis, they want material enjoyment. They may go to a temple, but for material gains. So many, it's not hard to find. And then the jnanis, they desire liberation. Those who are jnanis, they desire liberation. And then those who are yogis, in one sense, if you go through the process of yoga, many of the yogis sometimes get diverted to material opulence, actually, because all the siddhis start coming. Even though, according to Yoga Sutras, liberation is the goal, just like Gyan Mark, but sometimes there's a lot of distractions that can happen to a practitioner, because before attaining liberation, the person starts getting all siddhis, all of these, they can do miracles and everything. So followers get attracted to that, and sometimes that becomes the focus, and it's possible. So all these astrasiddhis, anima, lagima, all those things. So therefore, Mahaprabhu says, they're all lusty because of this, because there is a want for something. As long as a person has too many wants, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. Needs, okay, basic needs are fine. Everyone has to have some minimum needs to live in this world. That is no problem. But unnecessary wants, then one cannot be peaceful. So all these people are not peaceful. Whereas a real devotee of the Lord, a real devotee is desireless. That such a devotee is peaceful and satisfied. And therefore, Mahaprabhu says, such a person, therefore devotee is the best of all. That's the reason why he says devotee is the best of all. So like this, Mahaprabhu nails down. He gives so many verses and examples, but he nails down why devotee is the best of all. Because really, everyone will say my path is best. But we have to understand why this path is the best. So, and really, it's, we can theoretically read, but really when we start feeling like this, that I'm desireless. Because I'm desireless means what's Lord Krishna's desire, or what my Guru Maharaj's desire, like that. That is my desire, which means really that we are desireless. Otherwise, even I want to be desireless is also a desire. And that is also a problem. I want to be desireless. I want to stop thinking everything. Nirvana, zero, nothing. That is also a desire. So really, this process goes above all those things. That I just want to please the Lord, spiritual master, the sadhus. So like that, that mentality. Therefore, a devotee is peaceful and satisfied. And therefore, is considered the best by Sriman Mahaprabhu. So, of course, Rupa Goswami expands everything into great details in his books, like Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu, like that. And then, this is the devotee. Now, let's get into a life of a devotee. Devotee means for one who is attached to Krishna. So, really, devotee means one who is attached to Krishna. All the external things are only a branding. Like there's a branding, right? There's a devotee means he has a brand. He wears a Silla Kivas, Kanti, like that. So all those things are like branding. They're also important. But really the core of it is attached to Krishna. He or she is very attached to Krishna. And everything comes because of that attachment. All other things. Because what is pleasing to Krishna, that is pleasing to the devotee, like that. Everything else follows that part only. It's not the other way around, as we all know. And even this attachment is of two types. This attachment to the Krishna is of two types. Now again, this attachment, love and everything, we can theoretically analyze all these things. But love is, as we know, love is blind. So attachment is not something that you cannot tell a person, hey, go and love that person. No, it just happens. So this analysis, all those things given by our acharyas is only simply to explain the tattva, but attachment is something that has to be natural. One cannot be artificial. By reading the descriptions, one cannot start artificially posing. But it's to give inspiration so that naturally the bhakti sprouts in the heart. So that is the reason for analyzing all these things. Some of it may sound very theoretical, but nevertheless, since we are going through the summary, we will still try to go through. So there is this attachment in awe and reverence. That is one type of attachment. And then there is another type of attachment, is a very pure attachment without any reverence, without any awe and reverence. So for awe and reverence, it's not the only, but most prominent in Madhura, Dwaraka, Vaikuntha. So there are exceptions and there are mixtures, but we are just going through the overview, right? The high level, bird's view. Madhura, Dwaraka, Vaikuntha, like that. The devotees there. Or the devotees who are in this world, who are inspired by those devotees. Yeah. Who are following in their footsteps. So like those devotees there, in the spiritual world are called Ragatmika Bhaktas, and those who are here are called Raga and Nuga, like that. Those who are following that mood, like that. Of course, this comes under the natural reverence. It's more explained there. But in general, you can say there are devotees there who are eternally in the spiritual world, and those who are here who are taking inspiration from them, just the overview. And then there is another path of attachment, another type of attachment is without the reverence, where we see in Gokula Vrindavan. So in Gokula Vrindavan, it's like, very small place. But the love is so huge. It's not quantifiable. How can you quantify love? It's more, it's we can only experience it. When we become qualified, we can only experience. We cannot analyze and quantify and divide and put them in hierarchies. No, it just doesn't make sense. So just like how a big dignitary, he has his home life and he has his professional life. It's like that. Gokul is Krishna's home. What more can we explain? So, but for the followers' point of view, divisions are there about couple of moods based on these. The mood of Vaidhi Bhakti and mood of Raga Bhakti. Of course, the elaborations on this are there in Bhakti Dasamra Sindhu, but Vaidhi Bhakti, in a nutshell, is the person is inspired to do devotional service because Shastra says so. That is Vaidhi Bhakti. Shastra is saying, do this, don't do this, and that's it. I'm going there. That is Vaidhi Bhakti, that kind of a mood. And then the mood of Raga Bhakti is like someone has a natural liking to do it. He's not, he or she is not doing it because the guru told him to do, or the scripture is telling them to do. They just naturally do it. Just like I've heard some, Prabhupada Memories video, I heard when Prabhupada was saying, I didn't know why I should shave my head, but I shaved my head because I saw Prabhupada shave his head. It's like, he's not doing it because, okay, Hari Bhakti Vilas says this, and the Shastra says, like, no. He's just doing it because he has a natural liking. And okay, my guru doesn't eat this, and I don't eat this. Or something like that, It's not going into very esoteric things, but very natural liking. Like once in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was with the disciples, and there was an old lady who was regularly, consistently, every day coming and bringing a pot of water from Yamuna for Abhishek to the deities. Every day she was coming, very regularly. And Prabhupada was saying that this is her last life in this world. But many devotees are in Prabhupada, but she is not initiated. She is not doing this. She is not coming to Mangala Arati. Some people start telling this. Prabhupada said she doesn't need that because, you know, she has this natural liking. Of course, in her past life, she must have, you know, gotten the mercy of a sadhu, and or maybe in this life is continuing. So it's a very natural liking. She's not doing it because someone told her to do it. So that's more like Raga Bhakti from a practitioner's point of view. And then among these Vaidhi and Raga, there are, Vaidhi, there is again three types: sadhana, bhava, sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. Those are three stages. And then in Raga, there is again three stages. Yeah, we will not get into the details, but just some overview. It will help us when we read in detail later. So this is how it is. But then when we ask how one should become a devotee, right now I'm not a devotee. I'm just wandering. How one becomes a devotee, one may ask. So Mahaprabhu actually starts from that explanation. He says that we are all wandering. A living entity is wandering throughout the planetary systems, entire universe. Some are in very, very upper planetary systems. Some are in the lower realms. Some are Earth. And then those who are wandering by their karma, one who is very lucky, one who is very fortunate, bhagya, bhagyavan, because it's causeless. How can you explain luck? How can you explain fortune? Bhagyavan, one who is very bhagya, one who is very bhagyavan, that person gets an opportunity to associate with Satguru by the grace of the Lord. You know, by the grace of Krishna, one gets Guru, by grace of Guru, one gets Krishna. It's you can't nail it down. They are like complimenting each other. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanji Guru Krishna Prasadhi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. That the person gets the Bhakti Lata Beach. And Bhakti Lata Beach, in practical terms, it is like one who is surrendering for initiation. But in a very natural term, it is one who gets the conviction in the heart to do this. So such a person, he receives that seed because he's inspired, and then he gets Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, and then he gets this mercy from Guru and starts Bhajan and Kriya like that. So like that, this fortunate person gets the seed from the Guru, gets the Bhakti Lata Beach. So it's actually the seed of the creeper of bhakti. Seed of the creeper of bhakti. So now what a person should do? The person, Mahaprabhu says, the person should take care of the seed like a gardener. Because everything is not completed by getting the Bhakti Lata Beach. Okay, the seed is got. Seed is, we can buy a seed from the garden store. But if you don't do anything with the seed dries up. But the seed dries up, yes. If nothing is done, so it has to be taken care of. But it never goes to waste. Sometimes very dry seed can, the right conditions can sprout. Seed never goes waste. But the duty of a gardener is to take good care of the seed. So the seed is being sown in the heart. So the seed has to be watered regularly by the processes of devotional services. There are nine limbs, Shravan, Kirtan, Vishnu Smaran, Pada Sevan, like that. So many. But it starts with Shravana and Kirtana. So a really main thing, hearing and chanting will water the seed. So it's not which limb. All limbs are equally important. And some people will have more attraction to one limb than the other. But the general thing is Shravana and Kirtana. And by regularly watering the seed will begin to sprout. And then, so again, this is Vishwanath thing that, think it like an external thing. It's more in the internal heart. In the heart, the seed will begin to sprout by hearing and chanting. So it's heart-based process. So even the external actions that are done are to facilitate the bhava only. It's not the other way around. The creeper gradually grows to a point where it penetrates the walls of this universe. And then it goes beyond the Viraja River. Because Viraja River, you know, as we know, like a boundary lies between the spiritual and material world. So there is no passion after that. So that's why it's like Viraja. There's no Raja. Viraja. It's like, okay, all this passion and all those things are done. So Viraja River, beyond that. It attains the Brahmaloka. The Brahman effulgence, and then penetrates and then reaches the spiritual sky, and then the spiritual planet itself, the Goloka Vrindavan. So all these things are they happen in the heart. It's very hard to imagine. So it's not like one is traveling in a gross manner, like on a spaceship, like the Mars rover or something. No, it's not like that. It's not gross. It goes inside the heart. That's why if you try to understand this Vedic cosmology with the modern astronomy, it's very hard to connect them fully. Because they can try a little bit here and there and try this is the same as that and all those things they can do. But really, this is all meditative worlds. These are meditative worlds. It's in a different dimension altogether. Using material laws, it's hard to prove these things. So it's not like the Mars rover going there and finding some sand and rock. No, it's going inside the heart. It penetrates all these spiritual realms and then goes to a spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan. And then the Shravana Kirtana never stops. Only thing is, initially people may do Shravana and Kirtana because they are told to do or because they have to do. But because I took a vow, so I'm doing it. But later, it's because I love. It's so nice. I want to do it. It's so beautiful. So that's the development of natural attachment. So this never stops. So these things never stop. Only thing is, initially it may be artificial. Later it may be natural. But it's all good. So this bhakti creeper keeps growing and it takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. So it reaches the planet and takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. And then there the creeper produces the fruit of love of God. So the fruit becomes, what happens? The fruit is there, but the fruit itself is not the full thing, right? The fruit has to become very ripe. The fruit becomes very ripe, and then the fruit falls down. So now the gardener takes the fruit, that is the full level. And then, so the devotees serve the Lord with so much bliss and relish the fruit of love. And they are eternally happy. So this is how Mahaprabhu says to Rupa Goswami about starting from getting the seed and then going all the way up and, as they say, living happily ever after. so nice. But it's not so easy, as we all know. It's just easy to say these things. But it's not so easy. Otherwise, why we have terminologies called struggling? Prabhu, I'm struggling. So it's not just, okay, the seed is there, you just water, and then boom. But there are some things that one has to take care. And one has to know how to take care. It's like, it's not, okay, you go and do the go seva, but you don't know how to take care of the go. You don't know how to give a shower to the go. You don't know how to rub the skin of the go so that they don't feel itchy. You don't know how to milk the cow. You don't know how to do go puja. You know nothing, but just naturally do go seva. So it will all come out naturally. That is not right. One has to know how to take care of a cow in order to go seva nicely. So even devotional service, it's not just chant. Everything will come. No. One has to know how to do the devotional service, how to perform devotional service. So therefore, that is the reason why Mahaprabhu wanted the Goswamis and his future followers to write Bhakti Shastras. So pretty much any book that comes out new is a commentary of the previous one. More commentary, more commentary, more commentary. So like that. Because everything rooted in Bhagavatam, you know. So one has to know how to take care of the negative influence that will divert one or disturb one or stop the growth. Because the gardener doesn't just, okay, just waters the plant and everything is good. There are so many things to take care of. There is weeds that will grow. The garden, weed has to be removed. There will be pests that will come and eat everything. So that has to be, you know, the garden has to be protected. So many things are there. And when you are living in a very, of course, now elephants don't come to our gardens. But if we are living in a, you know, very traditional setting, so many different animals are there, live in harmony. Sometimes elephants are there. So it's not the elephant can just walk through the garden and everything will be finished. So all those things are there one has to take care of. So there are the negative forces are like you can categorize them as not two things. One is aparadha. So radha means aradhana means worship. Aparadha means things that are opposed to worship. So just like Srimati Radharani, she is the best worshipper. Aparadha is opposite. It's like hurting Srimati Radharani. Aparadha. One should avoid aparadha. And then one should avoid weeds. Because too many weeds are growing, then all the menus that we put on the plant, the weeds will use them. All the watering that we do with Shravana Kirtana, the weeds will use them. And then weeds will become very strong and they'll grow very nicely. For some reason, weeds grow faster than the regular plant. This all of us know. You don't have to take care at all, it will just grow. Whereas the regular plant, unless you don't take care properly, they don't grow. But the weeds, you know, no one cares about them, they grow nicely. They steal all the nutrients on the soil, cause wreck. So, aparadha is any offense committed at the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. So while cultivating our creeper of devotion service in the material world, committing offense to the lotus feet of Vaishnavas is very hurtful to the Lord. And it's compared to like a mad elephant walking on the creepers. It literally uproots everything by the weight and breaks the creepers. And then the leaves of the creepers are now dried up. So one has to be very careful to not, you know, let these powerful elephant offenses inside the garden. One has to defend the creeper by putting a very good fence around it. One has to have a fence. So this fence is like very helpful. If one has an offensive mentality, one's fence should be even strong. That is why in Kalia was offending all the Rajavasis by his poison. Krishna didn't say just don't associate with them. He said just go away from this place. Sometimes that is better for Kalia. So that's just to teach something. So like that, one has to have a powerful fence so the elephant offenses don't enter. And then the weeds. Weeds are of, again, two broad categories. One weed is called bhukti kama. Bhukti means enjoyment. Bhukti kama, the desire for enjoyment. These weeds actually come and trouble the creeper. And then siddhi kama and mukti kama. This is another weed, siddhi kama and mukti kama. So bhukti kama, for example, one's desire for material enjoyment may also grow sometimes. For example, in one is doing some nice service, and then one is getting a lot of praise and recognition. Then instead of going on the waves of devotion, the person may start going on the waves of praise, waves of appreciation, recognition. See how nice I am. So like that, there's a danger. This is not coming from bhakti, but because of some immature aggregation of bhakti, it can come. So even though it's like as if anatta is coming from bhakti, it's really not. Bhakti Devi is not giving them. But someone has to guard himself from one's mentality getting deviated. So instead of floating on bhakti rasa sindhu, in the ocean of bhakti rasa, one can float on the ocean of all these other things. Because as soon as a person becomes a devotee, he becomes very famous. Krishna being all famous, a devotee of Krishna also becomes very famous. Because it is such a great thing to be a devotee of the Lord. It's not a cheap thing. So one gets the fame. But if one's using those fames for oneself, then bhakti kama. And then because one immediately gets better status in society. One gets a lot of respect from people. Like even though some people make fun of devotees, wearing dhoti kutta or sari or something, having kanti tilaka, but still, there are many people who think, he's a sadhu, he's a great person. Like sometimes when devotees are distributing books, they give respect to the devotees who are selling the book, by looking at their way of dealings and their tilaka, kanti, and what they talk. Although they think they're a monk. So a monk, okay. He's someone who's sacrificing his life and they think he's a monk like Dalai Lama or something. There's some respect. Okay, India, we know, it's no doubt. Even many Indians think you're a priest if you wear dhoti kurta. So like that, the person gets a lot of respect and recognition. But once one starts floating on those waves and enjoying those benefits, perks, that's a problem. And then lot of crooked thoughts or desires for, these are the main weeds actually. Desire for labha, puja, pratishta, profit. Because one starts getting a lot of charity now. So many people start giving donations. And then they used to write a big check and say, thank you. And then there's a lot of adoration. Oh, greatest person. Oh, how wonderful this person is. He has made 1,000 devotees. And then he has sold for 10,000 books per month. Number one Sankirtan devotee. And then a lot of distinction comes. And then one cannot always be first. Sometimes one goes second, third. And then one doesn't want others to advance, take the position. One wants that post. Crooked thoughts comes, political behaviors, politics. All these things starts coming. So these are all bhakti kamas, weeds. And if one doesn't distinguish between bhakti creeper and the weeds, and one thinks they're all part of bhakti, I'm doing this for Prabhupada, one may say. I'm doing all these things for Krishna. Do all nonsense I'm doing for Krishna only. So one may say. So one doesn't distinguish between bhakti creeper and other creepers. Then what happens? The sprinkling of water of Shravan Kirtan and the resultant side effects are misused. And then why? Because the other creepers, the weeds, they are getting nourished. And when these weeds get nourished, they take all the nutrients out of the soil, and then bhakti creeper goes down. So that's a big trap, not easy. Especially those who are very achievement oriented, they can fall into this trap. So these kind of things happen in spiritual institutions. But Mahaprabhu, during those times, they didn't have this kind of institutions. But still, they had this thought. Now, what a thinking they have. Amazing. They're thinking 10,000 years ahead. 500, hundreds of years ahead, they're thinking. Their thought process is so amazing. And if you read the sociology, take a university course in sociology of religions, all these things we can read in that. We can know what are the pitfalls that can happen in institutions. But it's still necessary for continuing and spreading the teachings. Let's say Saraswati Thakur, he said it's a necessary evil. It's a necessary evil. It's all part of managing things, and you need manpower, money, everything. So yeah, one has to be careful. And then the next weird is Siddhi Kama and Mukti Kama. Of course, these days these are not the big problems for devotees, but this is in a someone who is seeking and going after so many spiritual processes. There are some people who try to explore other spiritual processes. It is still applicable for some. But in those days, it was very widespread. These kind of different schools of thoughts were there, very famous schools of thoughts. So people were getting Vedic education. So most of the other processes, they focused on the material perfections, the four purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification and liberation. And then worship of devatas or worship of some mundane personality for material gain. And then all these siddhis, yogic siddhis. And now it's a big role actually. Yogic siddhis, people are getting a lot of attraction to that. And then mukti kama, the monistic, the monistic paths, the bliss of Brahman. The bliss of Brahman, the impersonal philosophy of desire to attain liberation from this world and become one with Brahman. So mukti kama, siddhi kama, mukti kama. These are some weeds. So these weeds, just because someone has exposure to these parts, these weeds should not remain. One should not have these weeds. One should clearly understand what the process of bhakti is according to Mahaprabhu's teaching to Rupa Goswami. And then we should be able to distinguish between different things. Like the expert gardener, no, which is a weed, which is a real plant. We cannot take the weed to be a tulsi plant. We cannot take tulsi plant to be a weed. We should know how to distinguish correctly. So as soon as intelligent devotee sees an unwanted weed, these unwanted weeds or creepers are growing beside the original creeper, he or she must cut it down, instantly cut it down, try to take it out of the root, remove the root all the way. So siddhi kama, mukti kama, bhukti kama. So we can also translate this to the modern world, bhukti kama, desire for enjoying the pleasures. So in the context of bhakti, it's described as weeds that grow alongside the creeper, profit, adoration, distinction being the main weeds, bhukti kama and siddhi kama are getting attracted to yogic siddhis or the liberation, the mukti, brahma sahajyam. Some people even do bhakti for getting brahma sahajyam. They talk so many things about bhakti. They shed tears about Krishna, his childhood pastimes. But the end, they want to merge with the Lord. So that's a weed in our path. That kind of a mentality is a weed. Because the mentality in our path is to serve forever. Not that serve now and then enjoy later by merging. So that's basic. And then Mahaprabhu goes on to explain the symptoms of pure devotion service. Pure devotion service. What are the symptoms? He says that my devotees, Mahaprabhu says, his devotees, and this may not be true in every path, every Vaishnava path. But Mahaprabhu says, in my devotees will not be interested in the five kinds of liberations. Salokya, Sarshti, Sarupya, Samipya, and Saijya. As we know, Salokya means the desire to get the liberation of being in the same planet of the Lord. Sarshti, to get the same opulence of the Lord. Sarupya, to get the form like the Lord. Samipya, to get proximity to the Lord. And then Sahajya is also acknowledged in Bhagavatam. But these are all based on Bhagavatam. Mahaprabhu is not making up things. All these have... that was the job of these Goswamis, to explain what Mahaprabhu said and back them up with Shastra. Shastra Pramana, Puranas, Itihasas, Vedas, Upanishads. So Sahajya being the oneness, that is also there. One of the kinds of liberation. So he says, Mahaprabhu says, my devotees only want to serve Bhagavan. They're not interested in these kinds of liberations. But yeah, of course, when a person goes to serve Krishna in the spiritual world, he's going to the planet. These things will come as a side effect. That is fine for the devotees of Mahaprabhu. They come, they may not come. They don't care. But I just want to serve Bhagavan. So these perks may come. So that is the primary conscious motive, is to serve Bhagavan. That is the primary conscious motive of devotees of Srimad Mahaprabhu. So this is actually there in Narada Pancharatra, about this mood, though it's explained nicely here, the seed of this concept comes from Narada Pancharatra, actually, where it said, Sarva Padi Vinir Muktam Tatparatvena Nirmalam Rishi Kena Rishi Kesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. So Sarva Upadi, Upadi means this material designations. So free from all the material designations, and free from all desires, except the desire to render seva. Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. Except the desire to render seva. Free from all desires, means free from all sarupya, sarashti, samipya, no. Free from all these things, except the desire to render seva to Bhagavan. Free from all the material designations of I am Brahmana, Kshatriya, I am Vaishya, I am Shudra, like that. All the other material designations of this world, I am so and so. And then the Bhakta will engage the senses in the service of Rishikesh, the master of all senses. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Shayamanam, Bhakti, Ruchate. Free from all material designations, free from all desires, except the desire to serve Bhagavan, the Bhakta will render the engage the senses in the service of Rishikesha, the master of senses. How? By using the ear for hearing about the Lord. By using the eyes for looking at the form of the Lord. So many, every sense that we have should be engaged in the service of Rishikesha. Now one may say, okay, I'm hearing, I'm chanting. And I'm hearing because I love to hear. But what it has to do with service to Krishna? I like to read astrophysics because I like astrophysics. It's not a service. I like to hear about Krishna because I love it. What do you mean by Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, engaging the senses in service? How is it service? It is a service because just like when someone talks good about us, then we feel very happy, right? We feel very happy. Krishna has the same psychology, it seems. When we hear about Krishna, he becomes happy. When you talk about Krishna, he becomes happy. For us, we say, we give some rules, don't have this pratishtha, because we are acting on the platform of body instead of the soul. But Krishna, there is no body soul. He is both. He's a spiritual, he doesn't have a soul inside and a body outside. He's Krishna. So when someone talks good about him, when someone hears about him, when someone likes to decorate his deity, Krishna feels happy. It's the psychology, simple. Someone speaks good about us, we feel happy. Obviously. Of course, I'm talking in a very simplistic sense. Of course, then we go about talking about my body, not talking about my soul, and I'm going into all those things. Simplistic. So Krishna, he feels happy. That's seva. Giving happiness to Krishna is seva. Simple. So that is why it's a beautiful verse in Narada Pancharatra. This is what Mahaprabhu is explaining. What is meant by free from all desires? Free from all desires doesn't just mean material desires. Even getting desires to attain this perfection is also a desire. So really, free from all desires means just the desire to please Krishna. So beautiful. This is Mahaprabhu's explanation of bhakti. And then later, there's a lot of description about rasa tattva and everything. There is a section where the Mahaprabhu talks about all these things. So, bhava, prema. So, for a person, qualified sadhaka, surrendered sadhaka, all these things will come by the grace of internal energy, Guru and Krishna. So, it's okay to have some basic idea. It's okay to have some basic idea about rasa tattva and everything. But most of it will be theoretical for most people. So, really, our focus time and energy should be on the process. What we do daily is more important than those results. Even for any material success also. If we get focused too much on the results, we get very stressed. Oh, will I become a success? Or will I not? Like that. But if you just focus on doing our job every day, daily, doing our sadhana every day, what we do every day is more important. And then theoretical understanding of this rasa tattva and everything. But it's good to have some knowledge about it. And because as we reach asana, these things will too come. But our focus, every day, our focus, time and energy should be on our what we do every day, what hearing we do every day, what seva, what chanting, what is our quality. So that is our focus. Because there are many things that we don't have control over, because they are awarded by the internal potency for the fully surrendered sadhakas. As we were explaining in the beginning, love is not artificial, it happens. Even in the material world, love happens. It's not something artificial. So in that way, it happens by the mercy of the Swarup Shakti, Guru Krishna. So a Krishna devotee who is very attached, in the service of the Lord, and an emotional relation will come. A mood arises, actually. And that mood is called Sthayi Bhava. In one of the categories, it comes actually Shantarati, neutrality, Dasyarati, the mood of friendship, Vatsalyarati, the mood of parental affection, Madhuryarati, the mood of conjugal lover. So, actually, if you see what comes next, has the previous one also in it. For example, Shantarati is in Dasyarati. So, Sakhyarati. Dasya and Santa are included in Sakya. And in Vatsalya, all other previous things are included. For example, parents can talk to us like a friend. It's possible. And parents can also serve us. and they serve like Nanda Maharaj was. What is this? Yashoda Nanda, they were serving Krishna actually in the parental mode. And then there's Madhurya Rati, conjugal lover. All the other, everything else is included in that. All the other previous ones. So some examples Maharaj, Mahaprabhu cites in his verses. He says the Navyogendras, the four Kumaras, they have this neutrality, Shantarati. And then Dasyada are unlimited. There's no limit. I mean, unlimited Dasyarati in the Vaikuntha planets. And everywhere, just about which land is more prominent in what is there, what is our understanding. But Dasyarati is unlimited. And then for Sakya, example of Sridham, Sudham is being given. And then Vatsalya, Yashoda Nanda Maharaj, Madhurya, the Gopis, undoubtedly. So like that, it is there. One can develop the Sthayi Bhava. Of course, it is not that one can pick and choose something. It is just given. The seed is given by the spiritual master. And whatever the seed is that's what will sprout, actually. Just philosophically, it is not, of course there are exceptions, There are always exceptions to the rule. But if it's a seed of a banyan tree, you're going to get a banyan tree. So the seed comes from the Guru Parampara. So, but these are there. Everything is being explained here. And then there are many items that interact with the Sthayi Bhava. So Sthayi Bhava is like a dominant emotion, the dominant emotion that develops, very dominant emotion. And then there are, it's not that one thing is dominant. For example, a devotee may be in servitude, Sthayi Bhava, but they can also have other things that can come and interact. It's not that always they are only in awe and reverence serving. Other things come also. They come and go, like waves. So they are all called vibhavas, anubhavas, and sanchari bhavas. So again, just to touch on it briefly, vibhava means the cause. Again, this has two types, alambana and udipana. Alambana means then the substrate and the person. Udipana is the excitant, the things that excite the person. Yeah, we won't go into detail all these things. Most of it is just theoretical talks. And then anubhava is the effect that arises from the emotion. And then there is sanchari bhava, which means there are secondary feelings to primary feelings. It's called sanchari bhava. It's like the word secondary sanchari we can use to remember. Anubhava means, anubhava means the It's the effect for the rise of emotion, the internal effect. Internal effect is anubhava. Sanchari is the secondary feelings. And then vibhava is the cause. Vibhava. And then the sattvika bhavas means sattvika bhavas is what so many places it's explained about Sriman Mahaprabhu. The physical effects that are observed in the body from the emotions that are, you know, inside. The physical effects outside, like hair standing on the end, body shivering, all those things, body swooning, so many things. The physical effects that appear as a result of emotions inside. That's what sattvika bhavas. They are 8 in number, ashta sattvika bhavas. More details will be later as we read the chapters. So these are some basic outlines. And then this bhava is like, the bhava is actually compared to a ray of the sun of prema. So prema is like the sun, bhava is like a ray of the sun. So that is, I think that's fair enough to understand the difference between bhava and prema. Ray of a sun and then sun. So ray of a sun of, that's a verse also, I think. Prema suryamshu something, that's a verse. So it's like a ray in the sun of prema is bhava. So as the ray gets intensified, then it results in, you know, prema, the prema bhakti. So pretty much they are all one and the same. Only thing is the quantity and everything differs. As the ray gets very intense, then it's prema bhakti. So so more than all these descriptions, as it is said, one has to focus on the process more than the result, because the results come when the process is followed. Just like if someone eats nice, you know, like natural food, whole natural foods, someone eats them, naturally the person will be healthy down the line. Even if the person is very sick, he'll become very healthy. So like that, if the process is followed nicely, then all these results will come. Then when one will be able to experience those results, that is much better than theoretically learning all these definitions of all the different types of sattvic bhavas and everything. It's there, it is good, because it is the duty of the Goswamis to explain in detail all these. And they explain what they experienced. So it is still there, it is still a science. But from a practical point of view, it is good to focus on this Narada Pancharatra verse. It's also quoted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And this actually leads to all other experiences. Sarva Bhavi Vinirmuktam Tatparatena Nirmalam Rishi Kena Rishi Kesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. So free from all kinds of material designations, or free from all desires except the desire to render service to Bhagavan, one should engage one's senses in the service of Rishikesha, the master of all the senses. So this is the goal that everyday a devotee shoots for. This is the goal. How to become free from material designation that currently is bothering. How to become free from desires that is bothering. This is other than rendering seva to Bhagavan. And then how to engage one's senses in the service of Bhagavan in a steadfast manner. So this should be the focus of all these. Yeah, so that's, I think, it covers a brief summary of the entire section. First, I was thinking of maybe having another section for the second part, which is the post-liberated, as they call, post-liberated perfections. But then I thought, okay, it's better to focus on this Narada Pancharatra verse more than the other items, which we'll read. Okay, I'll stop here, I think. I've gone a little bit over the time. Jai Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So if anyone like to add more points, please feel free to do so. Hare Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna Prabhu Dandavatanam. Thank you so much, Prabhu. This is very, very nice. Thanks for the entire summary. Been waiting to hear this. Thank you so much, Prabhu. It was like hearing the entire essence of Bhaktira Samhita also. Thanks a lot. I really like the meaning of Virajada, you were saying. There's always something new to learn from your class.
there were so many things that I could thank it so much. And also you were talking about the weeds and many things, which was very, very interesting. Thank you so much for this very good summary. Towards the end, I couldn't hear you properly on what you were telling. So you were telling that that you have, I mean, like, would you like to have one more session on this, or you're pretty much done with the essence of what has been taught for this one?
Oh, thank you for your kind words. Actually, this is good, Mataji. No need to have one more session.
Because, This is.
I thought the Avi would need, but I think this is great.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. This was very, very helpful. And if anyone else has anything to add or ask any questions to Prabhuji, please go ahead. Because I think this is the summary of this entire chapter at a shot. So if you have any questions on this, please ask Prabhuji right away. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for the class. I do have one question. Can you just repeat for me what the Vyabhichara?
Hello? I think I lost you, Mataji. I don't hear anything.
Yeah, I think we lost Mataji, but I think she was asking you to explain about the Vyabhichari Bhava.
Oh, okay. Vyabhichari Bhava, that's more ancillary emotion. Haribol?
Yes, please.
Yeah, Vyabhichari Bhavas are ancillary, you know, secondary emotions. Sometimes Sanchari and Vyabhichari are equated. But there are very subtle differences between them, which I don't know. But they are not the primary ones. They are just like the Sanchari Bhava. They are the things that cross the primary feelings, the secondary moods. For example, suddenly a gopi may, you know, develop a little bit of a friendship mode with Krishna instead of the conjugal mode. But though her dominant emotion is that Madhurya mood, but suddenly it could be Dasya, or some emotions related to Dasya can cross, but they are not permanent. Like, even if someone is in more of a predominant awe and reverence mode, suddenly sometimes a mood of a lover can cross, but it won't stay as prominent. So those are all like Vyabhichari, Sanchari Bhava.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, Mataji.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so these are like transient moods, right?
Yeah.
They come and they go. That's the Vyabhichari.
Yeah, they come like waves and they go, yeah.
Yeah. And then which Bob was it where you get these involuntary symptoms like, you know, hair standing on end, trembling? Which bhava is that?
Oh, it could be any bhava. It could be any of the modes. Like, these things...
Yeah, no, it is involuntary... these involuntary symptoms... My understanding is that that's one of the... I think one of the five bhavas specifically.
Yeah, the sattvika bhavas.
Okay, that's it. Sattvika.
Yeah.
Sattvika. Okay, that's sattvika.
Eight types, yeah.
Yeah, so there was anubhav, where you perform actions according to your sthayabhav. I mean, that's done consciously. Anubhav, sthayabhav. Sattvika Bhav, Vyabhichari, which you said is the same as, Vyabhichari you said is the same as, begins with an S.
Yeah, Sanchari. There are slight subtle differences, which I'm not aware of, but
Sanchari.
Like, sometimes
Anubhav, Sthayabhav, Sattvika Bhav, Vyabhichari Bhav, and I'm missing one.
Vibhav, the cause.
Oh, yeah, okay, Vibhav, okay. Thank you very much for the, yeah. Because the Vibhav, I know.
Just some basic.
Vibhav, I understand to be like the participants in the relationship. That's one branch, and then the other is the Udipins, right?
Yes, the excitant, the stimulants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the stimulants and the participants. What do we call the like the participants, like the Krishna and Mother Yashoda, for example?
What do we
call them?
Alambana is a person, any person. Any person who's experiencing. So that's Alambana. The person, the substratum, where it's being experienced.
Yeah. How do you say Alambana? How do you say?
Alambana.
Alambana.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Prabhu. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, these things are actually, they're coming from Natya Shastra of Bharata Muni. Those who have done academic study of traditional dance, Bharatanatyam, they know these things very well. But these mm-hmm. are actually used in Kavya, in poetry. The romantic poetry, you know. What our Goswamis have done is they have given a new explanation by saying that actually in the material realm, these feelings we experience, they're all temporary. Then it go away. But really, these explanations are not just for art, but they are really in the love for Krishna. So they have given an upgraded explanation with even more divisions. They have basically added on more things on Bharata Muni and Natya Shastra. So if you read Ujjwala Nilamani and if you read all these literatures, you can find more elaborations than what is in Natya Shastra. So,
Yes, thank you so much, Prabhu.
Thank you, Maharaj. Haribol.
Haribol.
Anyone else has anything to add or ask? Sorry, I have muted one of you, but I'm unable to unmute you because I'm outside now. So please, I beg forgiveness for that. But if anyone else has any other questions, please go ahead now.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Yeah, I just one other thing I have wanted to say was that, you know, when you said that, you know, these esoteric instructions, like about the bhavas that I was just mentioning, they are like not very practical, they're more theoretical for us, and it was like the duty of the Goswamis to teach those things. But I was thinking, well, if it was the duty of the Goswamis to teach them, that then doesn't it make it our duty also to try to understand those teachings?
Yes, it is our duty to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
But as far as daily what we do on a day-to-day daily life is concerned, is to qualify ourselves to come to that platform.
Yes.
But sometimes our energy can be diverted to just read those things. Because they seem nice, actually, to read those things. Because we don't have to do anything, just read. So that way it gets very theoretical sometimes. So that is the only warning. But it's definitely, we should not dismiss those things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, we should not dismiss those things.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you again, Prabhu. Thank you so much. Again, very, very, it was a very informative, enlightening class. Thank you so much.
Anyway, if no one else has any questions or comments for Prabhu, we can end the class now. Thank you all again. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha
kripasindubhyascha
Atitanam bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Ananta koti Vaishnavranda ki jai, Srila Rupa Goswami ki jai, Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, His Grace Bhakti Vinoda Prabhu ki jai.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Krishna,